this is. If I was you, I would go on the road and howl too. A bandom fanfic featuring members of Fall Out Boy, written by Lalejandra and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated G, contains the pairing Patrick Stump, Pete Wentz, and is an alternate universe historical fic. Author's notes. Comment fic for Azure J for the prompt Fall Out Boy-centric beat poets. Title from an amazing poem by Sekou Sundiata. Disclaimer. I don't really know anything about the beats, despite carrying around a copy and memorizing bits of Ginsberg's Kaddish when I was in high school. Pete hears about the beat movement about 2 seconds after it starts. Or, well, he hears about Ginsberg's poem the day before the first six gallery reading, because this guy Pete knows is out there helping them set up. When he gets a phone call long distance from San Francisco, he takes the reverse charges, because he knows it must be important. "You want to hear this," says Andy. And Pete listens over the crackling, static-filled line, as Al says,
"Who chain themselves to subways for the endless ride from Battery to Holy Bronx on Benzedrine until the noise of wheels and children brought them down, shuddering, mouth-racked and battered, bleak of brain, all drained of brilliance in the drear light of zoo."
And Pete's never been to New York, but it brings tears to his eyes anyway, because he thinks this is the kind of thing he himself writes. He writes it about Chicago and about the feelings pushing out of his chest and about the hopelessness and endlessness of living. He bites the back of his hand through the whole thing, and when Al, who Pete had kissed once behind a cafe several years ago in the midst of a heated argument about mental illness, gets to the end, finishes with a dark,
"That shivered the city down to the last radio with the absolute heart of the poem of life, butchered out of their own bodies, good to eat 1,000 years.
Pete slides down the wall and cries. Partially from sadness, but mostly from relief. He's always been able to see the ends of things, but this is the first time he's ever seen a beginning. When Andy gets back on the phone, he says, "Pete," and that's it. And Pete says, "Man, I'm gonna open an experimental art space here in Chicago." And Andy says, "Okay, I'll come back." He does. And Pete rounds up friends and begs money and opens the new vision of angels and kings in the basement of Joe's super sweet and tolerant mom's house. And they snap at the end of people's performances so they don't wake her up late at night. Joe brings around another drummer. And Pete's skeptical at first because the guy is wearing straight clothes. He's a total square in khakis and a tie and a button-up shirt and a pocket protector. But the guy can drum along to anything, can meet and match Andy beat for beat. And one day when Pete has a cold, he offers to read Pete's new poem for him, to get the words out there, and Pete lets him. And, oh, that is how Pete's poem should be read, in that voice. That voice, all the time. Afterward, Pete walks Patrick out, pulls him into the shadow of Mrs. Troman's garden, and says, "We should partner up. My words, your voice. We're making a scene here. We could kill those suckers in San Fran and New York." Patrick blushes. He's lost the tie and the pocket protector, but he still wears those ridiculous pants and the button-up shirts and loafers most of the time. And combined with the blush, he looks... well, Pete knows now that Patrick's copping a bit to fool the other straights, that he's as much a beat as the rest of them under it all, never hesitating to throw a punch or take a hit off a pipe. "Come on," Pete almost whispers. "Can't you dig it?" He knows he could be setting himself up for Patrick's right hook, but he leans in anyway and brushes the lips together. Patrick feels frozen against him, not moving at all, until Pete starts to pull back. "Fuck, Wentz," says Patrick shakily, gripping his wrist tightly, so tightly it hurts, so tightly, Pete thinks, there will be bruises later. "You're gonna get us arrested." "Maybe the pigs will handcuff us together," Pete suggests, and is so shocked when Patrick leans in for another kiss. There's a weird noise, though, and Pete pulls away to make sure that one of the Trollman's nosy neighbors isn't really going to call the cops. Instead, he sees Joe and Andy standing shoulder to shoulder and snapping their fingers, grinning. Patrick twines their fingers together and squeezes tightly. New vision, he says to Pete in a low voice. And even though Pete still feels the emptiness of the universe stretched out around him, he doesn't think he's going to spend so much time feeling lonely about it anymore. The end. Reader's notes. The excerpts included in this podfic are from Allen Ginsberg's reading of the poem Howl on October 25th, 1956, at the Poetry Center, San Francisco State University. The MP3s of this performance were generously provided by the University of Pennsylvania's Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing, and I highly, strongly, emphatically suggest checking out the rest of the MP3s available through that program. Just, I mean, this whole performance was recorded on, like, tape, and it's got that really gritty, real feel to it, and I wanted to include that ambiance in my podfic to lend more to the mood of the piece. Plus, Ginsberg does his poem a whole lot better than I do. Thank you for listening. Have a nice day.